I had a bird's eye view to your conversations, and I'm not going to ask you to report what your table said, because you all pretty much said the same thing. That prior to the Holy Spirit, there would have been this hopelessness, this duty, this sense of duty to obey the law. But with little help from God other than the conscience that you were born with. And we know that some people are born with more than others. Don't we? And so that pressure, that expectation, that duty, and then the hopeless idea of having to follow that law, which is why the system of sacrifice was such a blessing and so real. But here's what I see on the day of Pentecost that comes absolute full circle. You all read this. I heard you read it to each other. Unless I go away, the Advocate will not come to you. But if I go, I will send him to you. And when he comes, he will prove or convict the world in regards to righteousness, sin, righteousness, and judgment. We focus on the day of Pentecost on those apostles and disciples who received the Holy Spirit, who had this flame, who spoke in tongues, and the people responded. But we don't focus on 3,000 people that the Holy Spirit grabbed their heart and said, sin, righteousness, and judgment. This is true for you right now, today. And 3,000 people responded to the Holy Spirit on them. Sometimes we think it was just the words of the apostles that caused this response. But Jesus says in chapter 16, the way I read that, is that's not entirely how it works. You can speak pretty words all you want, but unless the Holy Spirit grabs somebody's heart and says, this is true, sin, righteousness, judgment, this is true for you right now. 3,000 people. You read the stories of Jesus. He said he fed 5,000 people one day. 5,000 people did not become followers that day. They left with their bellies full and happy about that. So I see in this one moment, 3,000 people coming, and I look in the Gospels and I don't see anywhere where I'm convinced that 3,000 people became believers in Jesus because of the words Jesus said. It's the Holy Spirit coming on those folks and saying, sin, righteousness, judgment, this is for you right now. And I just think that is just a part of the manifestation that amazes me, that I'm afraid that sometimes we skip over because we're so focused on the flame and the speech, right?
We like special effects.
We do. We do like special effects, Molly. Well spoken. Well spoken. So I wanted to bring that out and lay that before you and to see kind of how you respond to that. And I see nods and smiles. Because if we're here, we know what it's like to be convicted in regards to sin, righteousness, and judgment. And we also know that the Spirit, Jesus says, the Spirit is mine. And he says the things that I want to communicate to you. And how gorgeous is that? That's how it works, and that's what happens. So we have a lot of Acts left to cover. But if we skip this part, we miss it. Because imagine being those 12 guys on their own. I mean, I've heard many of you mention the difference in the apostles after this day. The rest of the book, there's no way the rest of the book happens without the arrival of the Holy Spirit at Pentecost. The rest of the book is about God working through these folks and folks responding to that work of God, okay? And it would be nice if we could just leave the story right here, but in the next few chapters, we have this tension that is building. And it's building, and it's building. It built up to the day that Jesus was crucified, and I'm sure that there were a lot of people that said, all right, that's over. Thank you. But then the resurrection, and we've got not just one guy, but we've got 130 or so that are talking about this, and all of a sudden we have 3,000 or so that are talking about this, and this thing will not die. And the rulers, the Sadducees, the Pharisees, the teachers of the law, realized that this thing was out of control in a hurry. But it's interesting to me that it starts pretty gentle. It starts pretty gentle. After the Holy Spirit comes, Peter, in chapter 3, heals a man who's a beggar. Very nice thing for him to do with the power of the Holy Spirit, right? Beggar's very excited. All the folks are very excited. Hey, look at this. Look at this. This guy got healed, and he's walking around praising God, and they recognized him as the same man who used to sit begging at the temple gate, and they were filled with wonder and amazement. And Peter, seizing the opportunity, says, let me tell you why this guy's healed. And he tells them about Jesus, the man that they crucified, rose again from the dead, and now is alive again. Beginning with Samuel and all the prophets who have spoken and foretold these days, and you are heirs of the prophets and the covenant God made with your fathers and to Abraham, through all your offspring, all the peoples on the earth will be blessed when God raised up his servant and sent him first to you to bless you by turning each of you from your wicked ways. And while Peter's talking, the guys show up. And one of the temple guard leans down and says to Peter, sorry to interrupt, but you're going to have to come with us. So, Peter goes with John, and they take them, and the number of men who believed grew to about 5,000. Doesn't include women in that number, right? So we've got men and women, so we can round that up to 8, 9, easy, right? They meet in Jerusalem. They're wondering what to do with these guys. Now, as you read chapter 4 of Acts, there's some names that are familiar. Annas the high priest was here. Wasn't he part of the deal with Jesus? And so were Caiaphas. Caiaphas has been in on this deal too. John, Alexander, and others of the high priest's family, they had Peter and John brought before them and began to question them. By whose power have you done this? Etc., etc. Peter and John have great responses. So they called them in again and commanded them not to teach anything about Jesus. And Peter and John said, which is right in God's eyes, to listen to you or to him? You be the judges. As for us, we can't help speaking about these things that we have seen and heard. And they couldn't decide how to punish them. Well, I say we beat them. Oh, I say we, you know. They couldn't decide how to punish them, so they let them go. All right? So we've got an arrest and acquittal. We can't decide what to do with you guys. We can't deny that the guy was healed, so get out of here and just stop that. But they couldn't stop. And they couldn't stop. There's other stories in here about the believers praying, and Ananias and Sapphira, which is a fascinating story. But the apostles keep healing people. They can't help it. The Holy Spirit's in them, and they see somebody sick, and they just heal somebody. And the people are believing and believing and believing. And as a result, people brought the sick into the streets and laid them on beds and mats so that at least Peter's shadow might fall on some of them as he passed by. Crowds gathered also from the towns around Jerusalem, bringing their sick and those tormented by evil spirits, and all of them were healed. Let's back up. Crowds gathered also from the towns around Jerusalem, bringing their sick. What did Jesus say? Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, ends of the earth. We're still in Jerusalem. The folks are coming to Jerusalem. They're not going out yet. The guys are there, and the people from the countryside are coming in. We are still very Jerusalem-centered here. The apostles, like I said, keep healing people. People are coming from all over town and out of town. And now the high priests are filled with jealousy. Sadducees are filled with jealousy. The leaders are filled with jealousy. And they throw the guys, all the apostles, in jail, like we talked about before. And they get out miraculously. And then, when they're out of jail, the apostles were brought and made to appear before the Sanhedrin to be questioned by the high priest. Okay, we know you escaped jail, so you got to come back and answer for this. And the scene was very much like the other ones we've seen. The apostles reply, they talk about Jesus. And this is what it says in verse 33 of chapter 5. When they heard this, they were furious and wanted to put them to death. We have had enough of you guys. But a Pharisee named Gamaliel, a teacher of the law who was honored by all the people, stood up in the Sanhedrin and ordered that the men be put outside for a little while. Then he addressed the Sanhedrin, "Men of Israel, consider carefully what you intend to do to these men. Some time ago, Theudas appeared claiming to be somebody, and about 400 men rallied to him, and he was killed, and all his followers were dispersed. And it all came to nothing. After him, Judas the Galilean appeared in the days of the census and led a band of people in revolt. He too was killed, and all his followers were scattered. Therefore, in the present case, I advise you, leave these men alone. Let them go. For if their purpose or activity is of human origin, it will fail. But if it is from God, you will not be able to stop these men. You will only find yourself fighting against God." And his speech persuaded them. And they called the apostles in and had them flogged. Okay, so see the progression here? You guys need to come with us. We have a conversation. Don't talk about him anymore. Happens again. You guys need to come with us. We're sending you to jail overnight. Oh, you're out of jail? Okay, let's have another talk. Gamaliel stands up and says, "Let him go." And they say, "We got to do something. We are so tired of this thing. I know. Let's beat him." Beat him sounds good. Okay. So you see, it's ramping up. It wasn't a one-time thing where all of a sudden everything went nuts. Everything went sideways. It was a ramping up. A ramping up. Jailed. Flogged. And the disciples were happy. They left rejoicing, because they had been counted worthy of suffering disgrace for the name. Day after day, in the temple courts and from house to house, they never stopped teaching and proclaiming the good news that Jesus is the Messiah. They never stopped. Beatings didn't slow them down. Just made them want to do it more. Then we have when this whole thing really reaches a climax. The Sanhedrin is so tired of this. They bring in Stephen because they trumped up charges against him. Does any of this sound familiar? I mean, it didn't work with Jesus, but they've only got one way of doing things around here. So they trump up some charges against Stephen, and Stephen gives this great speech in all of chapter 7. We have been talking about the story of God from the beginning last fall when we started talking about Genesis till now. We have been talking about this whole thing, this Bible, as a story. What we should have done was got you together toward the end of the fall, read Acts chapter 7 and said, "Any questions?" Because Stephen lays it all out. He lays out the history of Israel. He lays out the story of God, and he brings it to Jesus and says, "There it is, guys. There it is." and they couldn't handle it. Mike and I talked about this week. I find it interesting. And I honestly didn't have enough time to go through and really sort it out. But when Jesus was crucified, they took him to the Romans because they said, we don't have the authority to execute anyone. And then they get to Stephen. And it's like they just throw it all out. They didn't say, we need to go get some Romans to get permission to throw rocks at this guy. They said, we've had it. We have had it. If we answer to the Romans for this, we answer. I don't know if they thought that or if they were just so enraged that they didn't care anymore. They weren't even thinking about the Romans. They were just going to drag Stephen out and throw rocks at him until he was dead. You've already talked about it at your tables, how, you know, this scene of Stephen's stoning and the things that he had to say and what he saw, what he claimed to have seen. And he fell on his knees and cried out, Lord, do not hold this sin against them. And when he had said this, he fell asleep. And that was it. Or you would think.